This is St. Louis on the Air from St. Louis Public Radio. I'm Elaine Cha. The Kemper Art Museum at Washington University has opened its largest ever exhibition. It's called Making Their Mark, Works from the Shah Gotik Collection, and it features more than 80 works by nearly 70 women artists and artists of color, spanning almost 8 decades. In a moment, I'll be joined by Sabina Ekman, director and chief curator at the Kemper Art Museum. But first, I'm joined by Kamal Shah, art collector, philanthropist, former tech executive, and co-founder, along with her husband, Gaurav Garg, of the Shah Gotik Foundation. Welcome to St. Louis on the Air.
Thank you, Elaine. It's a pleasure to be here.
So, Kamal, you started collecting art in 2008 after stepping away from a career as a tech executive at Oracle, Netscape, and Yahoo. Why did you decide to begin collecting?
So I'm going to give a slightly roundabout answer to this, which is, you know, I came to the U.S. from India in 1991 to study computer science, to get a graduate degree at Stanford University. And my hope all along, and what I call my first calling now, was to be a CEO of a tech company, perhaps a $1 billion tech company. And I knew and believed that I was better than most men when it came to engineering. So I worked in the engineering world. I excelled. I ran a $100 million business as a tech executive by the time I was 29. And I thought I was sort of in it forever. However, in 2008, my son was diagnosed as needing occupational therapy and that he would never be able to catch a ball or ride a bike or ski. Or tie shoelaces. And so at that point, I realized that we as mothers are programmed to take care of our children above all else. And that was a moment when I decided to take a pause from my career and to stay home. And so for the next 5 years or so, I ended up supporting our public school foundation, which is where our kids studied, and raising the most money ever, because it became my next job almost. And I spent, you know, my 60 hours a week working on it. And once the kids had graduated, I still didn't quite know what to do with myself, which is when a few friends invited me to go on this very special trip to New York to see the Whitney Biennial in 2014. And it was alongside a really incredible curator, Mark Godfrey, from the Tate Modern. And that's where I saw two works that took my breath away. And these were muscular, somewhat gritty works. Some had humor in them. And they were not small. One was 12 feet tall. One was 10 feet by 10 feet. And I was blown away and mesmerized. And so they had to eventually come find me. But somehow that was that moment where I fell in love and where the collector in me was born. Mm-hmm. Now, if I look back, Gaurav, my husband, and I have traveled to so many different museums and galleries as we travel. And that's been one of our big joys of discovering art. And we both have a shared appreciation of abstract expressionism. And so we had this language of abstraction already built into our eyes and minds. And so when I saw these artworks that were really reclaiming abstraction and reinventing it in new ways, I was super curious. I really wanted to learn more. And later I found out that they were by women artists, Jacqueline Humphreys and Laura Owens. And so at that point, there was something in me which said, I have to tell the story. And I didn't quite know what the edges of the story were. But that's when I feel like that switch flipped.
How is it that you went from art lover to art collector? And when did you begin to accumulate more pieces?
So this is a question actually that I've never been asked before. But, you know, being a 5 foot 2 inches, 2 inch tall woman, brown skinned in the tech world, I have about 20 speaker badges that call me Mr. Shah.
Oh.
Because that was sort of assumed that if you're a speaker in the tech world, and especially in the 90s and early 2000s,
yes,
you're a man. And of course, I blame my parents for the name, which doesn't sound feminine at the first moment. But you know, it was always sort of interesting to see how people have these stereotypes in their head of like white, tall men being sort of, you know, the be-all, end-all. And I'd walk in and be running the business. And so to me, scale and power are not really subject to a particular race or a gender, that women have been making large muscular works. And that's, as perhaps as an engineer, perhaps as who I am, I'm actually much more drawn to them, to women who've conquered scale.
Mm-hmm. Are there elements of that experience that you had in the tech world that carried over into the art world? How were there assumptions that were made about you and your interest, not only in art, but in art that was created by women?
Right. You know, again, I've never been asked this question. It's a great question. You know, I think that there are a few tangents here. The first one being that I did not realize how much of my career in terms of selling to customers was going to be put to use, because galleries are not especially welcoming to first-time collectors.
Mm.
So you have to create a network of curators and network of influencers who will then help you buy the work you want. And so it takes a while to get in. And so you have to use every single business skill to really make your way into sort of the dealer network as well. I think the artists were actually, the women artists were curious about me, because here I was, this person coming from the tech world that was making buying decisions on fairly major works without the aid of her husband. And so they were very curious about this independent woman as well. So I think there were sort of lots of tangents. I would say the biggest was that in a moment where not many people were really focused on collecting works by women, being in Silicon Valley gives you sort of that confidence to follow your own instinct and to really go collect, perhaps in a crazy way, which I did, but to really go all in.
Mm-hmm.
Even though nobody was doing that around me. But if you have a dream, if you have a spark, you follow it.
Does that mean then that your husband got off was actually following you?
Don't ever tell him that, please.
Okay. I can't promise we'll edit that part out.
No, you don't. He's a true feminist. And, you know, he's the one who introduced me to artists like Rothko and de Kooning. And and Kandinsky even. And so in a way, he helped build this joint language of shared abstraction that we have. He actually accompanied me on some of the initial studio visits, and he'd love pretty much everything I loved.
Mm.
So that also gave me the confidence that we had such a connection in terms of what we loved, that I could easily just go ahead and acquire what I felt was right for our collection.
Mm-hmm. And before we move further anymore, how, in general terms, do you describe your art collection, particularly to those who might not be familiar
mm-hmm.
with, you know, the art scene, as it were, with the finer points about art collecting, you know, maybe to a young person who is maybe coming from a family where art is not part of, you know, what they talk about?
Right. I don't like to brag, but I'd say it is one of the most important art collections that really situate art history in the presence of women. It is a collection that's focused on abstraction, because abstraction is universal in that you cannot tell the gender, race, or geography of the artist, and it allows you to focus on art by itself. It is also personal in that abstraction lets you bring in your own ideas and emotions into the work and lets you interpret it in many different ways. And so it is one of the largest collections of abstraction made by contemporary women artists over the last 8 decades.
Mm-hmm. This is the third stop, St. Louis is,
mm-hmm.
the third stop for the exhibit after having been in New York and then in Berkeley.
Yes.
Given what your goals are, why is St. Louis the place where the exhibit is now?
You know, we have such a deep connection with St. Louis. So my husband, Gaurav, studied here between 1984 and 1990. He has two majors in his undergraduate and grad school. He is now a trustee at WashU. My son is a senior at WashU and a very happy one. And so I've been coming to WashU over the last 25 years. And there are a few more things I want to add, which is Chancellor Mardin was the first one to reach out to us as soon as we announced the book. And he said, we'd like to work with you on the show. And at that time, we hadn't materialized a show. And so it was really nice to get that kind of a welcome from him. And it has been such a pleasure to work with Sabine. And we've met each other, I want to say, about a decade ago. And we geeked out on a couple of artists that nobody else in the world was really talking about, one of them being Charlene Van Hyl and the second one being Amy Silman. And so there was sort of this instant connection between us. And so when it came about to figuring out the first three venues, I thought St. Louis would be the perfect place. Mm. I love the community of students. I love what it's done for both my husband and my son. So what better location to bring the show to? Mm.
And I would like to now introduce the Sabina you mentioned. Sabina is the Kemper Art Museum Director and Chief Curator. Welcome to St. Louis on the Air.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure.
From the Kemper's perspective and what you do there, Sabina, what made this exhibition a good fit beyond, you know, people who were saying that this would be a good fit?
Well, we are, the majority of our curatorial team are women. And we were also fortunate over the last decade to have the support of women collectors helping us acquire artworks by women. And when it came closer to considering the exhibition, I remember I traveled to Art Basel in Basel, where we met and sort of made the deal. And that was coinciding with an exhibition I did about the work of Katharina Grosse. And one of the Grosse paintings that we showed at the Kemper was actually from Komal's collection. So that was another conversation and connecting point we had. And I had worked at that point for like several years during the pandemic too with Katharina. And I got more and more fascinated really not only with abstraction, but in particular with painting, which is really the most complicated of all art forms. Mm-hmm. And something you don't understand, I find always fascinating. And so then I got a better idea and a better understanding of Komal's collection. And it is, you know, an extremely challenging and with that, an extremely fascinating collection for a curator being able to work on. So, you know, it's a pleasure to do this because you want to do it. And so beyond any institutional agendas, I would say I was just fascinated and I wanted to do it. You know, I also wanted to learn more. I'm not educated in this country. And I, there were several artists I have never had heard of, you know. So for me, it was also a great opportunity to really educate myself about many artists I'd never worked with. And then obviously, I thought it's a, you know, more than fantastic opportunity, not only for the Kemper Art Museum and Washington University, but for the entire city of St. Louis. There's so many artists that have never been shown here, specifically not with these kinds of large scale artworks Komal has in the collection, and which really they are loud, but they're also emphatic. And I think that is important, you know, they're effective. And I think St. Louis audiences will be thrilled to experience these works of art.
Komal, one piece in this exhibit that really struck me is by Joan Mitchell. Mm-hmm. It's a monumental diptych, and it was her final work before she died of lung cancer in 1992.
Correct.
Can you describe this painting for us?
So this is this joyous sunflower painting, and she used every single color of her color palette to reach almost all of this gigantic canvas in this very fragile state. And You know, there are these beautiful whites and magentas and blues, yellows, greens, reds. And there is a sense of urgency in the strokes, but there's also a sense of confidence for an artist who's in her prime and she knows what she's doing. And it has been described as a hero painting by an art historian called Klaus Curtis. I see it as a cornerstone of the collection because every single artist in the collection looks up to Joan Mitchell. And I think she is just a universally revered artist, not because of her lifestyle, which was to be a badass woman, but because of the fact that she was an incredible painter and really had no limits in what she did.
Sabine, for this Joan Mitchell diptych to be in this exhibition, how special is that?
It is very special. That is very hard to even answer that question, because I can only say to be able to install the work and to really also have our audiences, our students, have the opportunity to engage with the work and read it anew and maybe also respond to it through drawings, through paintings, is an amazing opportunity. So it's an amazing opportunity to have that painting here in St. Louis. And we will have a special lecture by Katie Siegel, who was one of the co-editors of the collection catalog. She will come here on October the 26th. To talk more about Joan Mitchell, and we will also collaborate with the St. Louis Art Museum about that, so you can see the significance to being able to show this painting here for the time of 3.5 months is a great, is a fantastic one.
Mm-hmm. Kamal, you'd mentioned earlier that other artists in this exhibition, perhaps in the art world as well, look up to Joan Mitchell. How is that the case? And if it, that is sort of a cornerstone piece, how did that affect the conversation that was happening among the pieces and between the artists whose work is part of the exhibit?
So one of my first realizations when I entered sort of the collecting world was that this artist universe is a very interconnected web of influences. And so, you know, I've had the good fortune of having some great curators as my teachers. So Mark Godfrey, I mentioned, Katie Siegel, Sabine mentioned, Gary Gerrels. And I remember that Mark Godfrey drew this literally on two pieces of paper, charts of influences, on a train from Basel to Zurich, and took me through how the artists were in this sort of, you know, inter-influential network. And that's when I started to realize how deep these connections lie. That's when I started talking to the artists who were already in our collection to see who their influences were. And so it's actually been sort of, I've come to learn about their influences by asking the artists directly. There are now artists who are in their 90s. There are three artists who are about 90 years old in this exhibition. There are several artists in their 80s. But then there are artists in their 20s as well in this exhibition. And a lot of it has come about, of course, by my falling in love with the work, but also by tracing these webs of influences. And it's always interesting to find how Joan Mitchell is everybody's special artist.
Sabine, one of the artists who is in their 80s is Suzanne Jackson, and her work is part of this exhibition. Describe for us what this work looks like.
That's a very good question as well, because the work is transparent. So it is made out of an acrylic material that thickens. And then she applied acrylic on top of it, but also other collage materials. And she calls it sculpted painting. So it hangs from the wall at a distance of exactly 2 feet, actually.
Exactly 2 feet.
And so you can look through the painting to the wall, and you can see shadows the painting creates on the floor and the wall behind it. So it's at the same time also a sort of a mobile, you could say.
You know, what I found interesting about her career is that at the age of 75, she had some paint laid out in her studio, and she peeled it and realized that that could be a painting, that a painting does not need a canvas. And so this is now sort of one of the most important bodies of her work. But the fact that she is still reinventing her practice at the age of 75, and, you know, the work that's in the show is part of that journey, is incredible. And so at the Whitney Biennial last year, they hung 6 of those works in this big room, which got the most attention for the show. But it's also sad that she has now finally gotten all this recognition at the age of 80. And she wasn't quite so recognized as an artist before.
Mm-hmm. One thing to note is that Suzanne Jackson was born in St. Louis.
Yes.
So there is something special, too, there about her work.
She was very keen to be here for the opening, but she has her own big survey show that opens at SF MoMA in 2 weeks.
Yeah.
So she's busy hanging that show.
And we still hope very much, though, that she can join us for either a lecture or an artist panel in December. So we are still in a conversation about this opportunity. I strongly believe, and, you know, you can always be wrong when you do these searches, that she has not yet been shown in St. Louis.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, there was a time before the internet, so you never want to say you're 100% sure. But I did a lot of research, and I could not find an exhibition of her work here in St. Louis.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very special, and we hope very, very much that this still will be a possible reality to have a conversation with her here in St. Louis.
Right. Kamal, we started this conversation about how you began collecting art in 2008 after you stepped away from your tech executive career, and that was to take care of your son, Bijoy Garg. And I think we should mention here, he is currently a WashU student. And of all things, after receiving a diagnosis that said that he would not maybe be able to catch a ball or ride a bike or tie his shoes, Bijoy is a race car driver. So you must be very proud, you know, as a mother, given what you were told when he was born.
I am very, very grateful for 2 reasons. One, that he overcame his obstacles, you know, a lot of sheer persistence and hard work. And that's sort of something that's now ingrained in him as he races every other weekend, sometimes in Europe, and then comes back and tries to get a good grade because his South Asian parents have told him that he needs to keep his grades up. And so it's really proud to see that happening. But I'm also grateful, on a second note, that he led me to my second calling and my final calling, which is to support women artists. And so I'm grateful to him for that, too.
Kamal Shah is an art collector, philanthropist, former tech executive, and co-founder with her husband, Gaurav Garg, of the Shah Garg Foundation. Sabine Ekman is the director and chief curator at the Kemper Art Museum at WashU. Thank you so much for talking with us today.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you for having us. Thank you.
Today's episode was produced by our executive producer, Alex Hoyer.
Audio engineering and podcast design by Aaron Dorr.
St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio. Understanding starts here.
Do you find yourself regularly listening to episodes of St. Louis on the Air? Suggest us to a friend you think might enjoy our conversations. And leave us a review and rating on Apple Podcasts on the App Store. It's the simplest way to help people discover our show. Thanks.
St. Louis Public Radio is a member-supported service of the University of Missouri-St. Louis.